And Haribo to all of you, too. Some of you may have participated in the discussion in Seattle during the Thanksgiving weekend on chapter 25 of the third canto Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Kapiladeva on Sadhu Sangha. So since that time, I've worked my way all the way over to chapter 32, successively covering verses. And I wanted to continue this evening but first I want to do a little background. Oh, there's a nice verse that I wanted to, go way, way back to the first canto. It's not so far back from the third canto. And those of you that know the how the first canto is structured. We speak that Shukadeva Goswami narrated Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pariksit heard Srimad Bhagavatam. But Shukadeva Goswami doesn't even appear at the end, the very last chapter of the first canto. So all of that first canto is setting the scene for Maharaj Pariksit to hear Srimad Bhagavatam that begins in the second canto. And the way that it begins is after Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Pariksit, the snake bird came, bit Maharaj Pariksit, his body instantly burst into flame, and Maharaj Pariksit, because his mind was fixed upon the personality of Godhead, he went back to Godhead, and his son, what's the name of his son, Maharaj Pariksit's son?
Janamejaya.
Janamejaya became king. So during the reign of Janamejaya, Kali Yuga had begun. It had begun even during his father's reign, but now it was moving. And the sages throughout the land, they knew. They knew by astrological calculation. They knew by symptoms. They knew by the statements of scripture. Kali Yuga had begun. And they knew what that meant. Not only that a brahmana, at least the young brahmana, Prabhupada describes this in the first canto, that the first symptom of the age of Kali is that the brahmana misuses his position. There's brahminical power, brahma tejas. And the son of a great brahmana learned from his father brahminical prowess and he misused it. Because something that's powerful in the hand of someone that's not qualified can do great harm. Just like technology. Technology in the hand of a fool can be very dangerous. And in a culture, or the culture of no culture, where technology prevails and culture is absent, character is absent, we have so many problems. We've created so many problems for want of character. And that was the first symptom of the age of Kali. The Brahmana cursed the king. Then another symptom of the age of Kali is that a person in the dress of a king, that's the personality of Kali, was violating the essential principles of Dharma. So both when the Brahminical and Kshatriya orders are assumed by unqualified persons, that's how Kali Yuga begins. So the sages of Naimisharanya, by symptom, by astrological calculation, by their knowledge of the scripture, Kali Yuga had begun. And because they were sages, they wanted to do something. It's the nature of an elevated personality. They want to use this body. They want to use the gifts that God has given them in the service to others. It's natural. It's expected, but it's also natural. So they did what they knew how to do. They decided to have a big yajna, a prolonged, non-stop, 1,000-year yajna. Of course, that meant it would go beyond their own lifetime to their children and their children's children and so on, but a continuous yajna, to the purpose of which was to diminish the influences of this age. Counteract, neutralize the influences of Kali Yuga. And they chose as a place, a sacred place, Naimisharanya. And it's a very special amongst sacred places because Naimisharanya is said to be the hub of the universe. Did you know that? Hub of the universe. What's the hub of this planet? North Pole, right. Because there's a North Pole and a South Pole, and it's tilted on an axis, right? Straight up and then on an axis. What's the axis? 23.5 degrees, right. So it's tilted and the Earth is turning as if there's a pole or a stick running from the North Pole to the South Pole. And it spins on that axis, right? So, just as the Earth spins on an axis, that the axis protrudes through the North Pole, South Pole, as if it's there. They're not a stick sticking through, but it's like that. So the universe is also turning. And the place where that turns, it marks the spot at the Naimisharanya. So what they wanted to do was that the benefit of the yajna that they were performing would not just be for the earth planet, but for the universe. That was the scope and scale of their spiritual acumen and their interest. So they planned this extended yajna at Naimisharanya. Sages from all over the land came. And in their midst was Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami was the son of one of the great disciples of Vyasadeva, Brahmaharshan Suta. Brahmaharshan Suta was entrusted, along with many other assistants, of the Puranic portion of the Vedas that Vyasa had compiled. And his son was Suta Goswami. So he had a very great heritage to follow. But even more important than that was he, Suta Goswami, was in the audience that heard Shukadeva Goswami speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. Something like later on in this third canto of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, there was somebody sitting right next to Uddhava hearing the same message, and that was Maitreya. Maitreya Muni then later becomes the narrator, as Krishna instructed him to explain to Vidura all that he had heard from Krishna to Vidura. And so there's four cantos of Maitreya speaking to Uddhava, Maitreya speaking to Vidura, what Maitreya heard from Krishna as Krishna was speaking to Uddhava. That's called disciplic succession. So in disciplic succession, Sutta Goswami heard Shukadeva Goswami speak Srimad Bhagavatam. Could you imagine being in that audience? Could you imagine having the qualification not only to sit there, but the sages said not only you heard it, but you understood it. And not only you understood it, but you assimilated it. And not only you assimilated it, but you have realized it in full. So please tell us. Rather than saying, can you tell us everything that you heard, they did it in pieces. They did it in the form of questions. So in the first canto, chapter 1, there's 6 questions. The sages present to Sutta Goswami in the forest of Naimisharanya. And the first question is a fantastic question. First, there's a preamble. They say, in this age of Kali, everything is diminished very greatly. Payenal payushabhya kalavasmin yugejana mandak sumandamatayo mandabhagya yupadruta. In this age of Kali, the spiritual interest of people in general is very low. And of those people that have some spiritual interest, their life duration is very short. And the Vedas are very vast. People aren't going to go through the vast Vedas and try to understand the essence of the vast Vedas. And even if someone does try, they need a teacher, and they'll go to, there's no one qualified as a teacher. They have tutors instead of teachers. And in their minds, they're always disturbed and always quarreling, and it's so difficult. So for the benefit of the people of the age of Kali, it's now begun. Can you describe the essence of the vast Vedas in a very simple, easy to understand statement? What's the essence of all the Vedas, please? That's the first question in chapter 1. And then the answer to that question comes in chapter 2. So question by question, Sutta Goswami answers. And there's a verse that many of you know, you can say it, recite it along with me. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. Even sounds nice, doesn't it? Vasudeve Bhagavati. Devotional service unto Vasudeva. Vasudeva means Krishna. Vasudeva is the son of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is Krishna. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga. Very, very explicit. Prayojitaha. By engaging in that devotional service, that's the essence of all the Vedas. But here's a bonus. When that devotional service is engaged properly, then without any independent endeavor, of its own accord, just coming from devotional service itself, knowledge arises and detachment arises. You don't need some separate program for knowledge. You don't need a separate program for detachment. Just become attached to Krishna, and by attachment to Krishna comes detachment from illusion, detachment from forgetfulness of Krishna. That's what Maya is. Prabhupada gave a very simple definition of spiritual and material. Listen, real simple. Material means forgetfulness of Krishna. Spiritual means seeing all things in relation to Krishna. Very simple definition. And he would sometimes refer to the microphone because it was right in front of his face. So I would like the microphone. It's matter. Then he would describe it. Iron, steel, plastic, some other components. Made of material elements, everyone knows. But if used in service to the source of all these elements, then it can act spiritually. Just to say the same thing in a different way, at the very, almost the very end, the very last, near the very last chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 87, 10th canto, Maharaj Parikshit has heard not only the first 9 cantos, but entirely from the mouth of Shukadev Goswami, he's heard Krishna's pastimes in full. And he's flying. He's transcendentally absorbed. He says to Shukadev Goswami, I'm ready. Let that mystical snake bird or whatever it is come. I'm ready. I'm fixed upon Krishna. Then he asks a question. Very good question. Listen. He has a doubt. Because Krishna is in his heart, he inspires him to have a doubt. And his doubt is, how did this happen? How did I get there? Because all I used was this ear. And all you used was the tongue. And the ear is material and tongue is material. So how did I get to that place? Using something material. Good question. Shukadev Goswami says, excellent question. This question is so excellent. Long ago, it was discussed by great sages, an assembly of sages. It's a classic question. And when they were discussing it, they said, oh, this is such a wonderful question. It was discussed long ago. In a discussion between the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras. And that's quite an assembly. And then the longest chapter in the entire 10th canto is that discussion. And if you want to have your mind spinning, read that chapter. Because you won't be able to understand it with your mind. It's not accessible by mental speculation. So if you don't understand it, like Prabhupada said, read it again. If you don't understand it still, read it again. If you don't understand it, read it again. Keep reading it and keep chanting and eventually you'll start to understand what they're saying. But it's way up there. If you think Bhakti Siddhanta's writings are difficult, read that one. Very, very elevated. But here's the essence of what they're saying in that exchange. Very simple. Everything that exists comes from the same source. The absolute truth, Vedanta, is the end of all knowledge. Veda Anta, the end of all knowledge, is the absolute truth from which everything comes. And since this tongue and this ear come from this personality of Godhead, when they're used in service to the personality of Godhead, they act in a spiritual way. That's how it happened. Use your tongue, use your ear in a spiritual way in relation to Vasudeva. And when you Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha, here's what happens. Causelessly, ahaitukam, without any material cause. That's what ahaituki means, without cause. It just happens. Voila. It happens. Knowledge arises and detachment arises. Krishna appears through that sound vibration, through the process of devotional service. So very important verse. It's such an important verse that it appears again almost identically in Lord Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. Surprise! It's something like in Bhagavad Gita. There's one verse that's repeated twice. It's so important. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So it has two different endings. And this verse also has the same beginning, and except for the very, very end. It's the same. I just have to find it. There it is. Text 23. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Asha Vairagyam Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. Just, you know, step to the side instead of a step to the side. Brahma Darshanam. Seeing the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada makes the point that you can't to see, there's an object. There's the seer, the seen, and the process of seeing. That's darshan. You see something. Therefore, person. As well, bhakti yoga unto Vasudeva, there's the servitor, there's the served, and the process of devotional service. The fruit of which is causelessly knowledge and detachment arise, and darshan of the personality of Godhead. But it's not a surprise that what Shukadeva Goswami spoke was the essence, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And so when asked what's the essence of all the Vedas, Sutta Goswami gave what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. The essence is devotional service to Krishna, from which knowledge and detachment arise. That's what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. But Shukadeva Goswami is describing to Maharaj Prikshit from the second canto some answers to questions that Maharaj Prikshit had. And to do that, he, Shukadeva Goswami, is making reference to a prior discussion between Maitreya and Vidura. And Maitreya is speaking of a prior conversation between Lord Kapila Dev and Devahuti. It's symmetry, because that's the cyclic succession, and the message that Kapila Dev spoke is the same message that each one of the successive downline persons spoke. So naturally, Sukadeva Goswami spoke the same thing, and Sutta Goswami spoke what he heard from Sukadeva Goswami. And so it appears that Kapila Dev is speaking. And the question that Shukadeva Goswami, excuse me, that Kapila Dev is answering goes back seven chapters, actually eight chapters. In chapter 24, this is 32. In chapter 24, Devahuti wants to know something that we should want to know. And actually, we do want to know how to get out of Maya. Basically, that's her question. She's expressing to her son, my husband has just left, and we've lived together for so long, and my life has been serving my husband, and because a promise was given to my husband by my father that when there's a son, namely you, Kapila Dev, when the son becomes of age to take care of your daughter, Devahuti, then I want to go and continue my practices in the forest of engaging in devotional service and meditation upon the personality of Godhead. And now he's gone. And I'm so attached. I can't think straight. My mind is totally bewildered. My intelligence is lost, just like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. She's saying about herself. And she's saying that condition is there because it's your energy. You're the personality of Godhead. Please remove that energy and give me the other one. The one that's reality. The internal potency. Please remove your external potency. And Kapila Dev smiles. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, he smiled thinking, my dear mother, what are you talking about? I'm the personality of Godhead, and you're my mother. How can you be in Maya? You're just asking this question for the benefit of others so they can hear. Okay, so I'll satisfy your desire. And he smiled. 8 chapters worth of an answer in different layers and levels and angles of approach, and it's amazing. But it comes back to the same theme, devotional service. So many subject matters, but the theme is devotional service. And it's not indirect. There's a previous verse, it's direct. Not indirect. Because there's in the Vedic wisdom, like the question of the sages of Naimisharanyata Sutta, there's so many processes within the Vedas. And you'll find people that are proponents of or exponents of, they're advocates of, they're fans of this, that, and the other thing. And they'll give all the arguments why this, that, and the other thing is, that's it. And if you don't know the bigger picture, you may think, yeah, that's it, without knowing what the essence is. So each of those uplifting, beneficial things, according to the bigger picture or the essence of the Vedas, is to come to devotional service. And that's what the Bhagavatam teaches. No padaya yadiratim shrama evahi kevalam. If those other processes or whatever uplifting, elevating, laudable something that someone does, and if that doesn't bring them to the position where vishvakshena kata ruchi, where they don't have an attraction for the topics of the personality of Godhead. Well, the language of the Bhagavatam is strong. It says, you just wasted your time, Baba. don't waste your time. The message is directly take up. Now, directly means through the representatives of the Supreme Lord. That's directly. So what it means not to do is impersonal or other types of worship that are not acknowledging the personality of Godhead. And just directly worship the personality of Godhead. The translation of that verse, text 23, engagement in Krishna consciousness and application of devotional service unto Krishna make it possible to advance in knowledge and detachment as well as in self-realization. The exalted devotee's mind becomes equipped in sensory activities and he is transcendental to all of that which is agreeable and not agreeable. Priyam and apriyam. Very similar to the language of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna speaks in the 6th chapter about being neutral. Pebbles, stone, and gold. It's all the same. Neither attracted to or repulsed by, duality of any kind, then that's, you can't fake that. It's not cosmetic. It's something where there's attachment to the Supreme, then there's detachment from the rest. It's one of the descriptions of the fruits of the process of hearing. One can understand, sometimes people ask the question, how can I understand if I'm advancing in Krishna consciousness? Very simple, there's three standards given in the Bhagavatam. This is one of them. Bhakti parishano bhavo viraktir anyatracha. Bhakti, the desire to serve Krishna, the personality of Godhead. I want to serve Krishna. I want to be situated in a relationship of service with Krishna eternally. Like Lord Chaitanya prays, na danam, na janam, na sundarim, bhavitamba, jagadish, akamaye, mama janmani, jamanishvare, bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki toyi. These things I don't want. There's one thing I do want. Your causeless devotional service in my life. Birth after birth. Birth after birth means I'm not aspiring for liberation. Birth after birth is fine with me. Engage me in your devotional service, please. So, bhakti. Then, para isha anubhav. Isha and para isha, the supreme controller. Anubhav. Great feeling for the personality of Godhead. I want to serve with great feeling for the personality of Godhead. And viraktir anyatracha, detachment from anything else. So those are symptoms. Maybe the easiest one to you know, the little litmus test to see how you're doing in your Krishna consciousness, how much detachment is there from other things that are not directly benefiting devotional service? Like in Padma Purana, that the symptoms of surrender are described. This mentioned in Nectar Devotion. Accepting things favorable for devotional service. Rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service. That's viraktir anyatracha. Things favorable, yes. Things unfavorable, no thank you. Not a big struggle. No thank you. You know, politely, but no thank you. Just like coming together to hear kirtan and hear something from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. There's so many persons. We're all busy doing so many things. Everyone's. But come together for that purpose. That's a symptom of making progress in Krishna consciousness. Eagerness to hear the topics of Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami, when speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't stop for 7 days and 7 nights. And Maharaj Pariksit, he didn't no sleeping. No, he didn't even eat. Didn't even drink water. He didn't even think about it. He was just absorbed in hearing. You know, that's not humanly possible for us. We're not on that platform. But that eagerness can carry you beyond your normal limitations. Like, here's a for example. Somebody, you've had a busy day, and at the end of the day, you're exhausted. And somebody knocks on the door and says, "Dear friend, you haven't seen in a long time." All of a sudden, you're revved up and, you know, having this nice exchange with this person can go on for a long time. You just, whoa, it's really late. But you're so absorbed in those things that bring you happiness that you forget. Time just flies. So like that, if there's absorption in the activities of hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, the initial practices of bhakti, then detachment from other things is easy. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Vishaya vinivartante miraharsha dehinam, those who are embodied, giving up the objects of sense gratification, vishaya vinivartante, giving up the objects of senses while the mind is still dwelling on those objects of the senses, it doesn't endure. But if there's a higher taste, it's easy. I travel a lot, and so over a period of time I get to meet the same people, like the people that work at the airport. And there's this really mean lady in Chicago. She's got a whistle, and anybody that's stopping to pick up somebody, she's got her whistle screaming at him, and she yells really, and she does, knows how to do this one, you know, makes... here, you know, like she's in Chicago, she sounds like a New Yorker. So I made friends with her because I was standing on the curb waiting, and she came over. It was freezing cold. She said, you know, what do you got there to eat? I was having a sandwich, and I said, well, why don't you take one? She said, well, I haven't had lunch yet, but, you know, that's really kind of you. And then she started eating it, right? You know, took the whistle off and started eating it. Wow, this is really good. Can I get the recipe? I said, next time, I see you here regularly. I'll bring the recipe. I'll bring you another sandwich. And so every time she comes right over. Oh, how nice to see you. What you got there today? the higher taste, you know. Her nature completely changes. Just taking prasadam. I haven't yet invited her to the temple. That'll come one of these days. When there's a higher taste, the lower taste and lower nature can be displaced. So that's what's being said here by Kapila Dev to Devahuti. The position of the mind being equipoised, so you're not disturbed when something displeasing arises, and you're not overly joyed when something pleasing arises. You're simply staying engaged in devotional service. This kind or that kind of devotional service. That's the real position of happiness. So this other happiness, or so-called happiness and so-called unhappiness, it fades. It's just different varieties of opportunity for service. This circumstance, that circumstance, whatever the circumstance, let me stay fixed in devotional service. And all of that was background to cover the next verse. Text 25. Because of his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision, and he sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Person. Now that's not us. He's now speaking of way up there, level of Krishna consciousness. the Uttam Bhakti platform, Uttam Adhikari platform. I'll just read the purport quickly. Perception of the disagreeable arises from attachment. A devotee has no personal attachment to anything except for Krishna. Therefore, for him, there is no question of agreeable or disagreeable. For the service of the Lord, he can accept anything, although it may be disagreeable to his personal interest. In fact, he is completely free from personal interest, and thus, anything agreeable to the Lord is agreeable to him. For example, for Arjuna, at first, fighting was not agreeable. But when he understood that the fighting was agreeable to the Lord, he accepted the fighting as agreeable. That is the position of a pure devotee. For his personal interest, there is nothing which is agreeable or disagreeable. Everything is done for the Lord, and therefore he is free from attachment and detachment. That is the transcendental stage of neutrality. A pure devotee enjoys life in the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. I'll read that sentence again. It's very nice. It's like, the happiness of the beloved is my happiness. That is the transcendental position of neutrality. A pure devotee enjoys life in the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. There's another very, very eloquent statement where Prabhupada very simply presents something similar. Yes, here we go. An advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Normally, we would hear Prabhupada say, in the service of the Lord. But here it's, he dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And in that sense, he becomes qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You intimately associate with Krishna. Prabhupada's phrase, packed up or fixed up. It became one of those ISKCON vernacular things. Oh, that devotee's fixed up. That was in the early days. Because Prabhupada used it so fixed that just so absorbed in or attached to Krishna that he becomes dovetailed with the qualities of Krishna. He becomes qualitatively like Krishna. He becomes one with Krishna. Qualitatively one with Krishna. And that's the nature of devotional service. That's unmixed. Or avyavichari bhakti. Avyavichari, undivided devotional service. Undivided devotional service is just as being described here, where the interest of the beloved is my interest. The happiness of the beloved is my happiness. The pleasure of the Supreme Lord is my pleasure. And then the devotee takes on transcendental qualities or qualities like the Lord. And that's what he's advising Devahuti. But going back to the question that Devahuti asked, she's already there. And Kapila Dev knows that. So the dialogue is for us. It's the same as Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is already there. He's taking this position as if he's one of us by Krishna's arrangement, so Krishna construct us. And similar with Devahuti. so we can get these transcendental teachings of devotional service and understand it very eloquently, very beautifully, very deeply, very devotionally. And there's more chapters to come after this one. The description, the last thing, the description of Kapila Dev given by Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita is that he's a Shaktivesha avatar of a particular kind. So there's six kinds of avatars, and one of them is the Shaktivesha avatar. But he gives, there's four subdivisions of the Shaktivesha avatars. That's Rupa Goswami for you. And he's, the category of Shaktivesha avatar is that in this category, the persons generally, they're renounced. Generally, they're very austere. They give extensive teachings. Vyasadeva is an example. Dattatreya is an example. Kapila Dev is an example. Kapila Dev didn't just teach Devahuti. He had a whole list of persons that he taught. It's not presented in detail here in the Bhagavatam, but it's mentioned and elsewhere. There's some descriptions. So his teachings to Devahuti, even that, take some of the verses in Bhagavad Gita and you get 2-3 chapters of Kapila Dev's teachings explaining a couple of verses from Bhagavad Gita. He expands in detail. So the essence is there in Bhagavad Gita. Learn Bhagavad Gita and you're doing very well. And to help appreciate the merit of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, read Kapila Dev's teachings. And you'll go, wow, Krishna made it really easy in Bhagavad Gita. The essence is there. Okay. I'll stop there and see if there's any discussion. Something you want to hear something more about or explained? Yes?
I just wanted to ask a question.
Can you turn the volume up so the people over there can hear?
I just wanted to ask something not related.
Not related?
Yes.
I'm used to it.
So, the essence is to aspire to become a devotee which is pleasing to the Lord.
That's right on topic.
So, recently I came across somebody who is, you know, going to another mission of some sort. I didn't take much details, but the way they were propounding the fact that they call it to be fact is that they are working on the platform of the Raganuga spontaneity.
Okay.
And from what we learned is that that's a pretty high platform.
That's a pretty high platform.
Now, they're not chanting the rounds of the beats, but I don't know what their practice is. So how do we, so to speak, relate to such people out there that propound something that is of the highest order, which is existing, but they are doing it, they are saying everything is subordinate to.
Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panjaratriki Vidhimvina Ahaikuntiki Harer Bhaktir Utpattaya Iva Kalpate. That's how we relate to that. The verse is Rupa Goswami's verse, and he says, without reference to Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, Pancharatriki, without proper scriptural reference, a propounding of something is but a utpat, a big disturbance to society. Now we shouldn't, say to such a person, "You're a big disturbance to society." Now Prabhupada could do that and would do that, and we're not Prabhupada, so we may not do that. But your question wasn't how do you speak to the person, your question was how to relate to such things. That which doesn't make reference to scripture and the authorities of scripture coming in descending disciplic succession, we don't, you know, it's a big disturbance to innocent people who are being misled by that message. There, just a little anecdotal amplification of that answer. In Austin, Texas, there's a person who started an organization, a Bengali sannyasi, simply imitating Prabhupada. And he's teaching Raghunuga Bhakti. And, you know, he has a Sunday feast and he serves spaghetti. I know that because somebody went. They wanted to, like, check it out. So, the person giving the Sunday lecture was a Swamini, a lady sannyasi. And he hadn't heard that word Swamini before. It was kind of a new one. And she was teaching, you don't have to follow any regulations, you just do spontaneous devotional service. So this was, you know, a Guyanese man, not initiated, but just because he had heard from Srila Prabhupada, he raised his hand at the end and said, "If I understood your message right, you don't have to follow any regulations, you just engage in spontaneously in devotional service. Does that mean if I eat meat, fish, or eggs, or have sex, or take intoxication, or I gamble, that's okay?" She got all flustered. "I don't follow any regulations, I just engage in spontaneous..." It's deception. It's cheating. You know, in raw language, it's cheating. Kaitava. Adharma. So, but it may look like, they use some of the language of and dress like, but it's a deviation. So, what? Another question is, how do I help this person? How do I at least be their well-wisher? Don't slap them silly because they don't know what they're doing. Wish them well, and you know, in a, depending upon the circumstance and the person and so on, the relationship, you can point, you ask them questions of like that, or something. The teacher of this Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti is Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami teaches that preceding Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. What happened to the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti? Because through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami's teachings, one becomes purified and that way eligible for Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti. And even the Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti, Bhakta, he still engages in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But simultaneously, there's another sadhana that he engages in that's on the spontaneous platform. And it's right in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's the scriptural reference for Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti, which we follow when we're eligible from proper Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Now, The person may be interested to hear or not interested to hear because they're happy to not have any restrictions or injunctions. Yes.
Hi, Krishna.
This question is, of course, not relating to your current plan. It's regarding the japa. In your in the japa retreat the year before last when I attended, you had said that, you know, you chant one mantra at a time.
I was just repeating Bhurijan Prabhu. I was just repeating Bhurijan Prabhu. But it's a nice thing to repeat.
So how do you, could you kindly let us know, how do you do, like, you know, some of the ways, practical ways of, you know, kind of focusing on your
purpose? You just take that one. You want a different one?
No, I mean, when you say one mantra at a time, like, you know, you say Hare Krishna, so How do you do it? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Okay, that's a different question. There are three modes of nature. This is one way of elaborating on it. There's the mode of passion, there's the mode of ignorance, and there's the mode of goodness. In the mode of ignorance, I lament over the past. Something happened, and my mind is going in the past. And the mode of passion is doing and creating and controlling and enjoying. And so the mode of passion, the mind races forward to not what I'm doing right at the moment, but what I'm going to do. Planning the day and figuring out something or other. And the mode of goodness is the moment. We're having a discussion, so I'm not thinking about all the work that I have to do. I'm thinking about you and the questions you're asking and the audience and the topic of Kapila, you know, so being present. And since the activity of chanting is chanting, then be present with Krishna when chanting, rather than, you know, ignorance and passion.
How do you be present, like, you know?
Practice it, because Krishna is a person. And in my heart of hearts, I want to love, and I want to be loved. Everyone. And there's a perfect person to reciprocate with that tendency to love and wanting to be loved. And that's Krishna. That's the deepest thing in my heart of hearts. I want that. So let me connect that with the object, the abode of love and the object of love, and the relationship. Rather than because the next moment is going to happen whether I plan it out or not. I was appreciating this the other day, you know, the Ram Nomi, and then it became Purnima, and then the phases of the moon were diminishing, and, you know, we can't stop. Time keeps moving. It's inexorable. Time keeps moving. We can't stop it. So what are we to do? Be in the moment. Experience the fullness of our relationship with Krishna to our capacity now. And then the next moment, now, and then the next moment, now. Don't worry about the mantra or mantras before that you didn't chant nicely, and the ones that you hope you'll chant nicely going into the future. those won't be chanted nicely if you're not in that moment chanting them nicely. So chant the one that you're chanting now nicely, and then the next one nicely. Don't worry about, well, I didn't do it nicely this time, so how's it going to work next time? Just each mantra that you're chanting, each word, each syllable, or each mantra, whatever unit you like, but in the moment. And striving like that helps bring the mind initially to goodness, because it reduces passion and ignorance, and ultimately to transcendence, because that's the window into transcendence. And then there are things that I can do that can assist, and things that I can avoid to assist the quality of goodness. Frame my life in the quality of goodness as much as possible. With regulation, with cleanliness, with honesty, with respect, with qualities of goodness. So that when I'm chanting, that goodness predominates more, and I can chant the mantra that I'm now chanting with attention. I can't be attentive to the one that I'm not chanting yet. I can't be attentive to the one that I didn't chant so attentively, but I can be attentive to the one I'm chanting right now. And that's the mode of goodness. It nurtures transcendence. And abhyasa yoga yuktena, the quality of constant practice, that's also a quality of goodness. Someone, a teenager, was writing to me saying, you know, I see that one of my weaknesses is I'm enthusiastic to do something and then it fades and I don't complete it. And it's everything that I do, whether it's a project at school or reading a section of the Bhagavatam, because she's being homeschooled. So I want to read that section, and then, you know, after some time it's gone. You know, it's the modes of nature acting. How to keep the mind fixed. So some of the same things I'm saying to you, I said to her in reply. Quality of goodness, and just continue to practice. If the mind wanders, bring it back and practice. And practice and practice and practice and practice. And Prabhupada's teaching is by practice something becomes second nature. Even materially something becomes second nature, what to speak of spiritually. Yes. When someone's learning to drive, but you know, after you know how to drive, it's second nature. Typing. Just, you know, typing. You don't have to think about it. Just, you know, I don't know how it works. It just happens. And even when you know you hit the wrong key, you know that it was, you know, so you hit the backspace. Anyway, it's practice. So that's even something mechanical and manual. But to speak of something that's of the soul, completely natural to the soul, it's completely natural to the soul. So practice it. And that which is natural to the soul comes out. It replaces the conditioned nature. It becomes your actual nature. That's self-realization, transcendental life. And the means, most effective recommended means for us is the chanting of the holy name. So practice being present with Krishna when you're chanting. It's the most natural thing that there is. The most effective thing that there is. And it will improve qualitatively everything else that you do. everything else that you do. And don't do it nicely, and it will negatively impact everything else that you do. It's up there. It's the most important. And that's another dimension. Recognizing it's most important. That's rocket fuel. Recognize how it's important, and that will help you. Chant one mantra at a time. Okay. So, to see if there's someone. Yes.
You are saying in the unconditional devotion.
Can you hear him back there?
No.
Unconditional devotional service. Should I give you the microphone?
No. In the unconditional devotion.
In unconditional devotion.
And unadulterated devotion.
And unadulterated devotion.
We surrender ourselves to God.
We surrender ourselves to Krishna.
Krishna, and then He will take care of your being or your well-being or whatever it is. This is what I understood.
That's not exactly what I said. But go ahead.
My question is, in most of the Hinduism, for example, there are a lot of pujas, vratas and other things.
There's lots of everything.
There is some condition. They put some condition.
Sure.
Fulfill my material desire.
Yeah.
Something. So I will...
Business deal.
And pay something in return.
You do this and I do that.
Yeah.
Contract.
So what is your view on that? And is it some... adulterated devotion?
Or sure. Something? It's mixed.
That is one question. And the second question is, in a normal society,
yeah,
if we are a little bit being spiritual at probably young age, for example, 20 to 30 or 35, like that, our parents themselves, you know, feel a little bit, why this guy is not... on par with others, not mingling with others, all these things, you know. They feel, being spiritual is not good thing at some age. And then...
Yeah, their idea is,
okay,
do in moderation, but don't be fanatical. Something like that, right?
Something like that. And they think after 50 or 60, okay, you can...
Yeah, sure, when you're old and...
But not compared to that.
Sure, sure. Kind of, I know the paradigm.
This kind of views are prevalent everywhere.
So. Yeah, right. Right.
How do you think we should face that one?
Just a smile, nod your head. And engage in undivided devotional service. Don't. I'm being a little sarcastic, but part of that concern, a major part of that concern, is that they don't understand Bhagavad Gita. Because the misunderstanding is, if you get spiritual, then you renounce the world. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was ready to renounce karma sannyas. That was his program. And Krishna said, no. Karma palatyag. Engage in your duty, but give up the attachment to the fruit of your work. They're thinking, karma sannyas, oh my God. Don't become fanatical. Karma sannyas. But it's not, the advocacy is not karma sannyas. Engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. So, if you or anyone try to explain that to their elderly parents, they won't hear it. They'll think, you're just saying that, you know, it's karma sannyas. So they'll be in anxiety. So, what to do? Be a nice son to your nice mother and father. But above the duty of the son to mother and father is the duty to God. That's the duty to mother and father comes from God. And there are other things that God says. Sarvadharmam parityaja, mamekam sharanam braja. Doesn't he say that? Well, wait a minute. If I do that, I may be neglecting my mother and father and so many other expectations of other people and demigods. And aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yashami ma srishaha. There's no sinful reaction, don't worry. And in case you think there is, don't worry. Ma srishaha. Squeaky clean. No reaction. Be respectful. Don't just be dismissive. Smile. Be nice. And, you know, serve as a son serves mother and father. Provided this surrender to Krishna platform is not tucked under the rug or dismissed or eliminated. And when they see, especially, I mean, I don't know about your parents, but commonly, when they see, he's very nice, and he keeps the company of very nice people, and they're such nice people. His friends are very nice, and they're very normal, and they just have this, you know, they get up early in the morning and do some things, and they're a little strict on their diet. He's very nice, and their friends are very nice. That's the extent to which some people can understand. My parents were like that. They didn't understand what I was doing, but they understood that I was very happy, and I was very nice to them, and and they saw qualities, they saw character, they liked what they saw. They would have preferred that I, you know, did something else than what I did. But after some time, actually they became very, privately, they became proud. Our son has dedicated himself, and this is very, very wonderful. And it's the same teaching that I got when I was growing up as a small boy. It's just that I did it by Prabhupada's mercy. Anyway. Ultimately, our duty is to please Krishna. Part of pleasing Krishna is respecting our parents. There's many other things that it's part of pleasing Krishna. Ultimately, it's pleasing Krishna. So there are ways of tactfully doing, and you can get some coaching from the devotees who have been through the same thing already. Something else? Okay. 9 o'clock, my goodness. Okay. Looks like prasadam is next, huh? What's next? Okay. Thank you all very much. Shrila Prabhupada ki jai.
So this is Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.